It's unfortunate when you end up throwing away food because it's spoiled. Maybe, and I've done it, and I bet you have too. Maybe you forgot what you bought or simply didn't have the time to use it. Larry Mueller here, letting food go to waste. You're not alone. About 900,000 tons of food waste went into Wisconsin landfills in 2024. 900,000 tons. Back with us, Casey Krawczynski as the solid waste coordinator for the Wisconsin DNR. We're going to hear about the DNR's latest report on food waste in Wisconsin. And as we talk with Casey, let us know maybe your strategies for reducing food waste, or tell us why sustainability is important to you. Give a call, the number 800-642-1234, or you could send an email to talk@wpr.org. That's talk@wpr.org. Casey Krawczynski, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thanks so much, Larry. It's great to be here. And my dad reminded me to wish you a congratulations on your upcoming retirement. So congratulations.
Well, thanks to you and thanks to your dad as well. I just mentioned that 900,000 tons of food waste went into Wisconsin landfills. And that's, I guess, according, that was in 2024, and that's according to your DNR's latest report on food waste. Who's generating all that waste?
Sure. So when we talk about food waste generated in the state, you know, the primary generator is the manufacturing sector, but they've been really good about finding uses for it outside of landfilling. So when we narrow in on the food waste that's going for landfill disposal, it's probably surprising to many to find out that the largest contributor is households. About 47% of all food waste being landfilled in Wisconsin is coming just from households. The second largest generator is the food service industry at about 40%. And then it's just, you know, grocery stores, farms, and manufacturers make up altogether just about 12%. So it's really households and food service that we could be focusing on.
Yeah. So when your food goes into a landfill, how long does it take to break down and maybe kind of turn back into soil? How does that work?
Sure. So when you're talking about breaking down and turning back into soil, that's really in an aerobic process, a process that happens when there's a lot of oxygen and food is breaking down. In a landfill environment, we want to save as much space as possible. And so they work really hard to push all of the oxygen out of the landfill and make sure there's only space for the waste. And so the process of breaking down is pretty different. As you kind of indicated with your question, it takes a lot longer, and also different microorganisms that break down the food waste live in that oxygen depleted environment. And so instead of the microorganisms that would, if you know, see a banana peel in a compost pile or even just on the side of the road, these microorganisms, their primary byproduct is methane. And so it's a much more potent greenhouse gas that we really want to try and minimize the release of.
Yeah. Beyond composting, what are some other ways food waste is processed?
The manufacturing sector that I mentioned that's been pretty good about avoiding the landfill does a lot of land spreading, direct land spreading with their food waste, which is a bit easier for them because they have a uniform source. It can also a lot of times go for animal feed. But then, as you noted, there's composting, both large scale composting, which is slowly starting to expand in Wisconsin, and at home composting. And then a common other source is a technology that people may be more familiar with for manure than food waste, which is called anaerobic digestion. And that process is basically putting food waste in a large tank and intentionally removing the oxygen. So you end up in a process similar to what I was describing with landfills, but because it's in an enclosed tank system, that methane can be captured, and it can either be used for heat, it can be processed and sold as electricity back into the grid, or it can be processed and cleaned and added right into a gas pipeline and sold as renewable natural gas.
You know, I'm thinking about the long-term implications of food waste. You know, how does it impact our environment and our health, for that matter?
Sure. So food waste on the environment, I guess I will start with is, you know, it has that methane release if it ends up in the landfill, but we also spend a lot of energy, water resources, and land resources in the production, growing and harvesting, the manufacturing, the transport, you know, the cooling, if it's something that needs refrigeration, all for that food waste to end up not being used. When we're talking about the food waste being landfilled, you know, you might assume that it's these trimmings, shells, bones, and things like that. But actually, just under 70% of the food waste being landfilled is previously edible food. So we're going and using all those energy resources and land resources to make something that could be, you know, eaten by the original, you know, purchaser or someone else in need of food. And instead, it's all just being wasted and ending up in the landfill. And, you know, similarly, I think, you know, health-wise, it's good to eat, you know, a varied, nutritious diet. And, you know, so getting creative with your food can help you do that. But also, groceries continue to get more and more expensive. So there might be a mental health aspect just as far as saving money by not spending, you know, a lot of your paycheck on food that just ends up being thrown away and, you know, something that you can't use.
One word that I've heard people use when they talk about food waste is diversion. What does that really mean? Diversion.
Sure. So diversion can be, so I would break food waste management into prevention and diversion. And then disposal. So prevention is keeping it from, you know, being wasted in the first place, making sure that we're using everything that we purchase and taking, you know, just what we need. And then that diversion is getting into all those other alternatives to landfilling, some of which I mentioned. So there's land spreading, which is you know, Wisconsin's a big agricultural state. If we can take those trimmings that have the nutrients needed to grow more of the, you know, the same produce, we can directly land spread that and not have to use as much fertilizer. There's animal feed, and that includes both the direct animal feed for some uniform waste types. But there's also more kind of emerging technology where some companies are able to take more mixed waste. Think of, like, you know, the bakery cases at a grocery store where you don't know exactly what the combination of materials is. They can do some nutrient testing on that waste material and actually blend it with a variety of other food wastes to get a uniform animal feed product. So that's something that's a little more emerging. And then we can divert to anaerobic digesters or wastewater treatment plants. And we can divert to composting, all of which are preferred over landfilling. And of course, you know, before we even get into any of those where, you know, food is considered waste, when we're still talking about food being used as food, we could definitely do more food donation and making sure that food that can't be used in one place is getting to hungry people.
Yeah. Christina in Glenwood has a question, I believe. Let's go there. Christina, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi there. Thank you. I have two questions. I'm wondering how important it is to follow best buy or sell by dates. And then also, I'm wondering about how long you can keep items in the freezer. For example, a friend had told me that they freeze their chickens for 4 years, and they say they're perfectly fine to eat because they've been frozen solid. And so I'm wondering what your thoughts are on both of those.
Okay.
Thanks for the questions. First, you know, there's a lot of confusing language. There's best buy, there's sell by, there's use by, there's expiration. Sometimes there's just a date with no terminology. And in Wisconsin, the only items where they have an actual expiration date that is for a food safety and it's really a nutrient quality is going to be baby formula and food and milk. Outside of that, all of those dates are not a health safety comment. They are determined by the manufacturer, and they are for best product quality. So it's really up to you on how you want to, you know, use some of those dates and interpret them. I'm sorry that they're so confusing. It's definitely something that the industry can work on improving. But smelling it, taking a look, if it's, you know, something that's just a question of whether it's stale or not, trying it and determining if you want to, you know, go ahead and use that item. The date, any exceedance of a date doesn't mean you automatically have to throw it away or that it's unsafe to eat. It's a highest quality. And so, you know, it might be as simple as a texture change or not as strong of a flavor for spices. In regards to freezing food, you know, I don't think freezing leftovers is a novel idea, but I would really encourage people to get more creative with their freezers than they have been. I agree. You know, there's some... first of all, there's a difference between having a deep freeze and your regular freezer. But there, you know, are some storage concerns with things like frostbite and, you know, freezer burn on food, depending on how they're packaged. But as far as a safety component, again, that those are just quality. As far as a safety component, it really does stop things in its tracks. If you have, you know, nuts that are easy to go stale, you just use them for one recipe or whatever, and you freeze it as soon after use, that best buy date is really extended until you take it, you know, frozen in time until you take it back out of the freezer again. It's going to stop that concern.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of it has to do with the packaging. You know, how good a job you do wrapping it to get it into the freezer can really make a difference. But it's mostly a kind of a taste issue as much as it is anything else. Mark in Wisconsin Dells has a question. Mark, hi.
Hi, Larry. I'm curious. I used to work in the grocery store a little bit, and it seemed like there was some problem with donating deli food left over to food pantry. And also with the schools, I remember watching students throw hundreds of apples into the trash in just one lunch period. And I was told by the girls that worked in the cafeteria that they weren't allowed to recover or save any of that food.
Yeah, so there are both national and state-specific protections for donating food, as long as, you know, all the food safety handling requirements are being followed and it's donated in, with well intention. So businesses and cafeteria-type settings can do a lot of food donation without being concerned, but you know, it is something that people are afraid of. There's the Harvard Food Policy Institute has been doing a lot of outreach and work for these types of organizations to help them, you know, try and see how easy it is to donate food, or, you know, make sure that they understand that they're protected, which will hopefully help increase some food donation. But, you know, with the school example, once it's been distributed to students, it can't go back typically into food donation. And so some things that schools are trying are, you know, concept, and a lot of cafeterias can try, is a concept of offering rather than assuming. So instead of putting all of the food on the tray or plate, asking students, do you want the apple? Because if they aren't distributed, then, you know, they could either be reused at the school or donated. And then also food share tables are becoming more common, which is, if you're not eating any whole foods in your school system, having a table set aside where students can put those foods and other students can take from it as needed or wanted.
Hmm. Thanks very much, Mark, for your question. Casey Krasinski, our guest, Solid Waste Coordinator for the Wisconsin DNR. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Taking a look at food waste here in our state and what we can do about it with our guest, Casey Krasinski, who is the Solid Waste Coordinator for the Wisconsin DNR. Questions, give a call, 800-642-1234, email to talk at WPR.org. And let's turn to Kay in Madison next. Hi, Kay.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my question. I've been waiting for months to ask it. I listen to NPR radio all the time, a news junkie, and the MIT Environmental Institute always has this advertisement that says methane does more to climate warming than fossil fuels do because the decomposition cycle goes in a faster, much faster cycle than fossil fuels do. So to my mind, that links to compost piles, which is then wasted food. But also, does manure go into, like, your back, like your little dog manure? Does it go into a compost pile? Is that separate? Which then, to my mind, begs the question, do we really need two farms with 2,000 cows?
Well, that's a whole different question, I think. But the question about methane from compost piles, is that contributing to global warming, I think, is what Kay is asking.
So compost piles are primarily generating CO2, and the benefits of the compost, the greenhouse gas emission savings by increasing the water retention, using fertilizer, using it as fertilizer and keeping it out of the landfill, end up where it's net positive. So we're actually saving CO2, even though the compost pile is releasing some CO2. And all of that food that is being composted in that oxygen-rich environment in a compost pile that's turned and aerated, if it isn't, it's typically going to a landfill, and that's where the methane is generated, in that oxygen-reduced environment. And while our landfills, you know, are collecting that to the best of their ability and flaring it and sometimes able to reuse it, the landfill, you know, is a much more open space, and some methane release does happen. So we much prefer composting to landfilling of any food waste or any organic matter possible. Pet waste does typically have some pathogens of concern, that we don't encourage it to be in a backyard compost because it doesn't get hot enough, as long as, if it's a carnivorous animal. So dogs and cats, if they're eating, you know, meat containing animal food.
Yeah. All right. Kay, thank you for calling. David in Minnesota, your turn. Hi, David.
Yeah, I want to make a comment about expiration dates on food. And I worked in grocery stores, and it's my belief that the expiration date has more to do with management of the factories than it really even does has to do with whether or not it's at the best buy date. They want to keep their factories working full time. So I think they choose expiration dates that cause food to be taken off the shelf and their factories stay full production.
Wow, what do you think of that, Casey?
I can't speak to how they're set by the manufacturers, but it is not a regulated date. However they are setting it is up to them and, you know, for their benefit. So I guess I will let people, you know, remind people that they can use their eyes and their nose to help determine whether or not the food is something they need to throw away or not.
If you're going to have your own compost pile, what items should or shouldn't you use in a waste compost pile like what we're talking about?
If you're doing home composting, which is great, you need a combination of what in the composting world are called composting greens and composting browns. So composting greens are nitrogen-rich waste materials, and that's going to be pretty much all food waste and also grass clippings or garden debris if it is still green. And then the composting browns are carbon-rich materials. So that's going to be leaves that have dried and turned brown are no longer green. And wood chips, soiled cardboard and paper, sawdust, those materials. So you need a combination of both. And for home composting, probably focusing on produce, vegetable peelings and fruit peelings. You know, it can be tea bags and coffee grounds. It can be that soiled paper and packaging material that can't otherwise be recycled. It could be eggshells, but your home compost is probably too small and doesn't get hot enough to properly manage fats, oils, and greases, dairy products, meat and bones, and also the certified compostable packaging. That certification is really for the large scale operations. So those materials are not things you probably want to put in your home compost to see that proper finished compost.
And if I guess wanting to know if the compost is finished or what happens when it doesn't seem right, what's the usual problem?
Sure. If people want to compost food waste at home, which is so great for our environment and very easy to do, but it is usually nitrogen heavy, so you need to have a kind of ongoing source of carbon to add to it. What we do at my house and what I find easiest is we save our leaves in the fall and continue adding them in to the food waste as it's added across the year, so that we kind of have that constant carbon and nitrogen mix. And if your food waste, if your compost is seeming to smell other than just kind of a routine earthy type smell, it's probably that you don't have enough carbon, or that the pile needs to be turned and more air needs to be added to the pile. If it just doesn't seem to be doing anything, it may be because we're in this type of cold snap and your home compost pile is too small to stay hot through this and stay active. But if it's, you know, not the middle of winter and it just doesn't seem to be breaking down, you might need more nitrogen-rich material or even some more water. You want it to be slightly moist.
Well, on that note, Casey, here we are out of time already. I hope you'll come back and be with us again. Love to have you back, and we'll talk some more with you down the road about this whole business with the DNR and food waste. Thank you.
Sounds wonderful. Thank you for having me.
Casey Krasinski is the Solid Waste Coordinator for the Wisconsin DNR. Great to have her with us, and thanks to all of our guests today, and thanks again to our team, of course, including Clara Neipert, Joel Patnod, Lee Rayburn, and Jeff Robbins. And, of course, our executive producer is Jill Nadeau. I'm Larry Mueller, and thank you so much for listening. And, hey, please stay with us. There's lots more in store right through the day on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for listening. Stay with us.